Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You've probably been hearing a lot about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in the news these days. On October 20, 2021, Bitcoin shot up to $66,975. And then yesterday evening on November 8, it reached a new all-time high over $68,000. If you've been wondering what all the hype is about, or maybe if it's time for you to dip your toes in the cryptocurrency waters, be sure to stay with me. I've got a very special show coming up. Hello, friends, and thank you for joining me this week. My name is Laura Adams. I'm a finance and small business expert and author who's been hosting the Money Girl podcast since 2008. If you want to earn more money with a side hustle, or you've already started your own business, be sure you don't miss my latest book. It's called Money Smart Solopreneur, a personal finance system for freelancers, entrepreneurs, and side hustlers. It was published by Entrepreneur Press and was an Amazon number one new release. You can get it as a paperback, ebook, or audiobook. Chris Hill, the host of the Motley Fool Money podcast, says, "This book is more than mere inspiration. Laura Adams has written an indispensable map for navigating the pitfalls everyone faces, but doesn't think about when they're starting a side hustle or their own business." So I hope you will check it out too. On this podcast, my mission is to help you get the knowledge and motivation to prioritize your finances, build wealth, and have more security and less stress. Every show is created to be like a mini training. I want to make sure you come away with practical advice and tips that will help you make better money decisions and take your financial life to the next level. So I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope you'll stick around. I hope you'll subscribe to the show and also think about participating. You can send me your money questions or comments. Leave a voice message at 302-364-0308, or send me an email using my contact page at lauradadams.com, or connect with me on Instagram at Laura D. Adams. And every week, we publish a companion blog post that we call the show notes. You can find them every week in the Money Girl section at quickanddirtytips.com. Today's episode is number 707, called Bitcoin for Beginners: Understanding the Future of Cryptocurrency. I spent a fantastic week last week in New York City for some work and play. I saw some shows and just ate some amazing food, caught up with some friends and some colleagues. I was super excited to spend time with the folks at Finder.com who were in the office. To discuss crypto and investing, I interviewed Fred Shibesta, who is the founder of Finder.com. He's also the author of an amazing new book called Go Live: 10 Principles to Launch a Global Empire. Fred's been investing in Bitcoin and altcoins since 2017, and he's going all in, incorporating crypto into his business strategy. We had a fantastic conversation about his background, business evolution, challenges as a founder, his personal investing strategy, and all kinds of ideas about the future of cryptocurrency. Stay with me for this fantastic interview, and you'll learn common misunderstandings about investing in cryptocurrency, how to begin slowly adding crypto to your investment portfolio, why Bitcoin is different from other types of crypto or altcoins, strategies for short-term trading versus long-term investing, how to keep the crypto you purchase secure from cyber theft, the most compelling reasons why everyone should consider investing in crypto, and where to learn more about investing and earning high yields on crypto balances. So here we go.
Fred, I am so excited to be in the office with you. This is amazing. Thank you for doing this. I'd love to start with a little bit about your background. Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in Australia, which is a long way away. And I've always been into, you know, personal finance and investing personally. I love that. I went to university, didn't turn up that much, and I actually started a company when I was at college, building people's websites and marketing them. And one of the experiments we tried was a credit card comparison site, and that sort of grew organically into quite a large company, and now, you know, founders in several places around the world. And now we're building, you know, this new app that helps people manage their money and invest their money and leverage a lot of cryptocurrency products, which is super exciting.
So you really made a change originally from just credit cards. Mm-hmm. Then you went into more products.
Yes.
What do you see the future of Finder as being?
Well, I think that cryptocurrency is providing all of these new and alternate ways that, you know, really money is used, money is spent, stored, you can earn interest, yield. It's replacing a lot of the systems which are quite legacy, quite old, to actually deliver, I guess, similar products, but better. So you can move money instantly. You can get higher yields than at a traditional bank. You can borrow money instantly without a credit score. And all of these friction points that exist, it can really overcome. And I think that's eventually where we're going to, where there'll be a full digital world people live in, like a metaverse, and there'll be banks in there, and they'll all be digital currencies. Like, you wouldn't want to wait for some external non-digital system when you're in a full digital world. You know, the COVID thing really brought that forward like 10 years because everyone's at home. They've got all this time. You've got digital friendships. You've got a digital identity. You've got digital bank accounts. And now, what's the difference in going and working in the digital world? You've got play-to-earn games, which are digital, people making money from playing games. This is where it's all going to coalesce. And yeah, I think in the next 10 years, banks will look a bit like fax machines.
I totally agree. I think you're right. Congratulations on publishing a book. A couple months ago, you published Go Live, 10 Principles to Launch a Global Empire. What does going live mean to you?
Well, I have a bias to putting things, you know, live on the internet. You know, I have this rule that if, you know, it's on your computer, then it doesn't really exist. It's not until you show it to the world. And that's what this book's about, is that mindset. You know, when you get to those barriers, when you're stopping, about pushing past those moments in time of doubt, you know, feelings of self-judgment, of, you know, you're not being good enough, feeling unworthy, you know, and I sort of share quite vulnerably all those moments and stories that I personally went through, how I overcame those things. And you know, I think it's not necessarily like you must do this. This is a mindset, because you're going to execute your business, and there are other books that teach you how to do things. This is about solving that why, that underlying burning push to actually get something into the world. And you are essentially, normally a founder is actually the biggest asset a company has in the start, because you're the only one there. And so this is what this book helps you with. It helps you go live. It helps you get off the ground with whatever it is you're doing.
What is your why?
I love to win. That sounds strange. But like, I broke this down once, and I went to like the absolute canonical of it. Like, where was the end? And eventually it all came back to just winning, like winning things for the sake of winning, you know. And I'm just a very competitive person. I think my purpose starts around the idea of creating things, but to do that, to get that win. And so it sort of comes out of the back of that. So I create things that serve people and help them either make money or save money. And the more people I help, you know, make money or save money, the more I benefit and the more I win, because the more they've won. And there's this natural symbiosis in that. My ultimate sort of why right now, and I sort of had this idea that, you know, a purpose, you can just make up a purpose. Like, you know, if you don't have to search for one, if you haven't got one, well, just make one up, you know. And I've made up three and I'm on my fourth one. But my purpose right now is to create something no one's ever done before. And obviously it needs to help a lot of people and help them save money, make money. That's only possible because, you know, I think I've created a lot of things in the past and learned a lot of made a lot of mistakes. I've got a massive graveyard of errors that I've made. But my ultimate is to get to a place where, you know, there's a legacy created from something I've created. And it's not just me, it's a team that creates these things. I'm merely one part of that. But I think I'm able to create a good environment and a good group of individuals to come together to create these things that no one's ever done before.
What do you think is the hardest part about being the leader of a global company?
I think continuously getting local context. You know, I think that was really hard, not being in the country. Like, being back here in New York has helped so much. Just remember the struggle, remember the challenge, remember the differences, and start to translate the organization and its strategy towards that has been amazing. Absolutely amazing. That local context is, it's very hard to write down. You can read it and you can hear it, but when you feel it and you're there, I think that's the only moment in time when you really get that. And I did a lot of traveling before, and I was not able to travel very much. I was, you know, sort of locked in Australia for 1.5 years, and that's really hard. That's not a easy paradigm to be able to gain global context. But now I think, you know, rebooting that, I think there's an edge in that local context. And I took a lot of the previous learnings I had and stored them up in my mind. You know, there are many other challenges. I have a constant daily challenge, big ones, small ones, medium term, long term. I think the one I always focus on is capital allocation. Like, where am I focused? Where's the organization focused? Where are its big investments and where are they going towards? That's one that I'm constantly debating and constantly thinking about.
All right, let's change gears a little bit. I want to talk to you about cryptocurrency, because I know you are a crypto enthusiast,
yeah,
to say the least.
That's true.
When did you first get knowledge of cryptocurrency, or become aware of it enough that you said, I'm going to buy some crypto?
2017. That was when I really got into it. Before that, I sort of looked at it and I was like, oh, I'm not really sure what this is. Like, in 16, I was like, oh, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm a bit confused. But 17, we started writing about it, started really learning about it. Then I just bought some and I just went straight down the rabbit hole. Like, just. And I think just personally speaking, it's because it's a confluence of things I love, which is technology, marketing, and finance. The three things that I love mixed together in one single thing. I'm like, I can't understand how that. And then with this new NFT gaming stuff, it's like gaming plus money plus marketing plus technology. So it's like four of the things I love. You know, where it's going right now, I feel like we're in 1996 of the internet. You know, really early still.
So for listeners who are not yet into crypto, or maybe they've been hearing a lot about Bitcoin going through the roof, you know, a few weeks ago, but they're pretty unfamiliar with it, what would you say are the biggest misconceptions about crypto?
Well, first one is, you know, this volatility thing. And the second one I like to talk about is, you know, it's a Ponzi scheme or some scam. And the other one is that it's trying to replace currency. I think touching on that first point, if I was to come to you, anyone who's listening now as well, and quote you, I would knock on your door every morning and I quoted you the price I'd be willing to pay for your house. I'd say, I will, you know, I'll give you this today. I'll give you $1,000 today, or, you know, I'll give you $1 million today. The next morning I come in, I'll give you $1,010,000. Next day I come in, I'll give you $998,000. You'd think I was like borderline schizophrenic. Pretty reasonable. But we just don't get quoted our house price that often. But that is actually what's happening. It's constantly moving around. There's different valuation changes happening. So the stock market only trades from like 9 o'clock to 4:30. Now, that means there's less time for it to move around. Just doesn't trade on the weekend. Whereas cryptocurrency trades 24/7. Literally, it trades on New Year's Eve. It trades all the time. And it trades in every single country. All the time. And so any single piece of news or movement moves the price. And so, yes, it's more volatile, but that's just a representation of literally just being more on, more turned on, more data coming in than anything else. No one's ever seen anything like that before. That's never been done. Like, not even foreign exchange shuts down for a small window where it doesn't trade. You know, that's the first thing. So it's just getting used to that. You know, I think the best way to deal with that is say, you know, if you're getting into Bitcoin, just buy some and hold and just, so, you know, forget about it. Or buy little bits and buy them over time and just forget about them. You know, I think the second one is this idea of it's a Ponzi scheme. Like it's you know, everyone says, oh, it's this thing built upon this thing. But actually, it takes some time to realize most things are kind of Ponzi-like. Like the reason why we believe our money or currency, you know, in our wallet is worth something is actually a bit of a Ponzi scheme. And another, you know, a piece of real estate is a Ponzi scheme because someone else has already bought it before and now you're willing to pay more for it. Like, why would you do that? Or less for it, depending on what it is. That's the similar mechanic that's actually going on in cryptocurrency, but it takes some time to realize is there's no one at the top. There's no CEO of Bitcoin to call. There's no call center. There's no one in the office. There is no office. There's no actual company. It's just a lines of code. That's it. Think about that. It's actually a miracle that it exists. It's actually a human miracle. And as you dig deeper, you realize that there are some, you know, age-old things in humanity where this has been replicated before. You know, people think about the tulips thing in Netherlands where tulips were suddenly worth, you know, $50 a tulip and then it crashed back down. You know, the difference here is that Bitcoin's gone up and it has crashed down, but it didn't go to zero. It went up to $20,000 last run and came back down to $3,800. But it didn't go to like $1,000 and it didn't go to $100. And it started at like a fraction of a cent. And again, you know, we're at $62,000 now, which is way past that previous one. So we've gone past that crash. So, you know, that was thought to be a Ponzi scheme before. Well, we've gone past there. And there's just complete recognition now that, like, you look at Amazon during the dot-com boom, again, Amazon went up massively, then took a massive tank, but it came back up and it's obviously way past that evaluation now. I think that these cryptocurrencies are the next revolution. It's like the way I think about this is if the internet was created again, like internet was like pictures and words, and it was like, you know, it sort of disrupted industries like in the media space, particularly businesses like classified businesses and a video, then it got into video and things like that. So sound, visual, motion graphics and words. So they were really upended in that sense. But if the internet was started again now, you would just start with cryptocurrency built in. Like, why would you go and so we like connect up credit cards to the internet? It's like clunky. It's like this weird crossover point. Whereas why don't you just pay for it instantly on the internet with internet money? And that's where we're going. And that's the way I think of it.
Yeah.
I think the third one, there's only 21 million Bitcoin and it's kind of like the digital gold of crypto and it backs up everything. If Bitcoin goes up, everything goes up. If Bitcoin goes down, everything goes down. There are obviously differences and movements, but just like, you know, currency used to be backed up by gold, Bitcoin's kind of that same thing. So if you're buying Bitcoin, you're buying gold, essentially.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there, I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts, Freakonomics Radio. Every week, host and best-selling author Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of business, economics, and so much more. He interviews CEOs, historians, and Nobel laureates to explore all kinds of topics, like why the best employees can make the worst bosses, and how whales went from being economic engines to environmental icons. If you're a curious person looking to better understand the world around you, you'll find everything you're looking for on Freakonomics Radio. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about crypto investing, are you typically a short-term trader or a long-term hodler, as they say, H-O-D-L, hang on for dear life? Is that, you mentioned maybe buying long-term. Is that your philosophy now, or have you done some short-term trading as well?
You know, there are things like short-term trade where, you know, I think there's a book called Reminiscence of a Stockbroker. And it talks about, it's exactly how crypto is playing out right now. It's a great book to feel the energy of that. And that's what trading is all about, just emotions. But I'm mainly a value investor, or I like yield. You know, I'm very conscious and aware when I'm investing and when I am trading. I'll have like stacks of things and I'm investing. Then I just leave it. Or I'll have stacks of things that I'm like, I'm trading this. This is something which I'm in here and I'm going to be out at this price and that's it. And then if it goes up further, well, I missed it. If it goes down, well, you know, that was a good trade. But that was my strategy. And I think just being very conscious and aware in the moment around that and knowing when you're trading and when you're investing. I think for many things, you know, it's hard in crypto because they come and go so fast. But there are several things I'm in for the long haul, like Bitcoin. I just see it's long haul. Buy and hold. Ethereum now is sort of, I think it's changed its economics a lot. It needs a lot to fix up a lot of things still as well. I like Luna. I think Axie Infinity is a great game. It's fascinating. I think it's the first of its kind. There are also other things I look at, but just, yeah, there's ecosystems and I guess coins that I back and think they solve something for the long haul, and it just takes time for it to all be adopted and take shape.
So when you think about your portfolio, obviously you're invested in businesses like Finder, you're invested in assets like crypto, real estate. Do you own other assets like stocks, bonds, kind of more traditional? I know, are you pretty diversified there, or are you, you know, kind of staying out of the traditional stock market?
No, I invest in stocks. I invested in stocks as a kid. I've invested in stocks for a long, long time. I have US stocks, I buy Australian stocks. Sometimes I buy UK stocks. I love stocks. They're just different mechanics and different things you're trading and investing. I don't buy bonds as much. I do invest in yield in crypto, which is the same kind of thing. It's just higher rates. Mm-hmm. I'm just not really into bonds that much. Real estate, yeah, definitely. I also invest in, you know, seed rounds. Series A venture fund businesses. Yeah, all sorts of investments. I think it's when I can get involved in businesses. That's sort of, you know, where I can add value personally, because that's where I got a lot of experience and a lot of equity, and I'm sort of translating that into rolling out things. So that's where I think I can get a lot of alpha out of that. In real estate, it's just not as passionate about it. I find the liquidity annoying, but it's different. You know, you have to think about that slightly differently. I haven't got my head around all of that. Businesses is where I put a lot of my effort and a lot of energy.
If somebody's brand new, they're thinking, yeah, I'm going to dip my toe in the waters of cryptocurrency. Are there any favorite tools or things that you would recommend that they start with to kind of just slowly get into that world?
Yeah, I think I join up with an exchange. Obviously, we've got a list of those on Finder, and just buy some Bitcoin or some Ethereum and buy a small amount. And, you know, buy $50, put $100 in and buy $50, and then go and set an order to being like $1,000 below wherever the price is trading today. And then, you know, hopefully you catch, you know, the price dipping, and now you're in, you know, or if it goes up, well, you missed it, but at least your $50 has gone up in value as well. And that kind of like, I call it sort of setting traps, and you get used to this thing that moves around so violently. And, you know, you pick up little buys down the bottom, and that really helps you get into the mindset of trading something which is, or investing in something which is depending on if you're trading or investing as well, but something that just moves so much. And start small, but never sell. Buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, just don't sell. Just hold.
For those who are a little more advanced, maybe who have accumulated some reasonable assets in crypto, where do you recommend people keep it? What should investors know about crypto security? You know, do you have a hot wallet or a cold wallet, or you keep your money in exchange? How do you think about keeping it secure?
I love cold wallets. I think they're great. I feel much safer having a cold wallet connected up to, you know, my different platforms. I keep only very small amounts in exchanges because I want to use them and deploy the coins into, you know, making the yield and performing for me. The whole, you know, no keys, no coins, that whole thing. I can understand that, but I think for some people that just, they don't have the security set up. So yeah, trust someone else to go and manage it for you. I get that. And I totally empathize with that. But you know, if you're serious, then yeah, definitely get a cold wallet. And
explain to people what that is.
Think of it like a security sort of dongle. I don't know if, you know, when you do your banking and you have a little token, which is your special key, and you carry it around with you. And that's actually you know, your way to access your bank account, really. So it's like a second security device attached to your bank account.
In your opinion, what are the biggest reasons why listeners should consider crypto? We've talked about a lot of them, but you know, is it inflation? Is it because it's a store of value? Is it the ethics of decentralized finance? Is it a combination of all those things? Is there kind of one thing that you think really should, you know, should kind of push people to consider investing?
Imagine if you invested in Google when it was $10 a share. And now it's, what, $3,000. That's essentially what you're looking at. It just doesn't seem like it. It looks scary. And everyone's like, oh, I don't believe it, all that kind of stuff. All those people and all those people who don't believe it and all those kind of things will eventually buy in when the price is crazy high. And it's still cheap. That's, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. It's not financial advice. But this is the way I look at it. Is like, you're basically, if you buy Ethereum or Bitcoin, you're basically buying Microsoft and Google when they're really small and no one really cares yet. Because everyone still looks at it. Remember the internet, when everyone was looking at internet stocks going, oh, they're going to bust, all of them? It's like, well, no. Like, Amazon's actually a decent business. Google is a really good business. And it spins off free cash flows nonstop. It's got really good fundamentals. It's got extreme sources of power, defensibility. And, you know, Bitcoin's got this same thing. It's got this huge brand. Think of the brand that's been created with no marketing department. That's insane. How much value is in just that alone? Like, people think crypto, they think Bitcoin. It's like, well, there's 6,000 other coins. No, they just think, and that's fair. And that brand aspect is just one thing you could actually invest in. And Warren Buffett did this all the time, right? He loves to invest behind defensibility and moats. And the asset of someone remembering and having historicity about your company, you know, making decisions without thinking, just assuming that you're the one. That's what branding is. You know, that's what Coca-Cola has. That's what a lot of the companies that, you know, he has. He's built huge. See's Candy is probably a great example. It's still this company which people love in their heart, but almost probably don't know why anymore. And so there's defensibility in that. There's long-term investability in. I'm still buying Bitcoin. I bought some more the other day. I keep buying.
Does Finder have any crypto on its balance sheet?
It does. Yeah, we do. We hold a lot of crypto because it's a great investment. It's good for us. We get paid in crypto.
I was going to ask you if you would consider paying employees in crypto.
We have opened that up in Australia, so you can get paid. There are a couple of people who have taken that up. And yeah, you can get paid 25% of your salary in Bitcoin. I think one of the other things people feel uncomfortable about is like, okay, I'm buying this thing, and the difference between a stock and how you value a stock and how you value a cryptocurrency, like, why does it have value? Because, you know, with a piece of property, you can get a yield, you can get a rental. I think that's an interesting area. Like, why does cryptocurrency have value?
Yeah. Why doesn't it value?
So different currencies have different reasons for having value. I think Bitcoin is a store of value. So it's like buying gold. I think Ethereum is like, it's kind of like the cost that you pay to run your server. It's the gas. It's what's called gas. But it's like when you buy a server to run a website, that's the same kind of thing that Ethereum is. And then there are other chains, you know, that provide pricing oracles. So they tell you the price of something and you pay them for that. The services in and of themselves. Some store data like Filecoin. Some allow you to vote and influence where a protocol is going or where a game's going and so you can get involved with it, and that has value. Some pay a yield at the back of them. Those are all really important, I guess, kind of representations of value. You know, when traditionally companies, a big moment in time is when a company was figured out to be valued on its discounted cash flows into the future. That's when sort of modern valuation of companies came into being. And I think that's why a lot of traditional economists struggle with cryptocurrency. They're like, well, how do I value this? Because there's no discounted cash flow. Like, why does it have any value? And I think that when you bring an asset like Bitcoin into something like that, well, you've got a big challenge because you've got a finite supply and, you know, we've got lots of use cases for it, you know, transferring value, storing value. And so the model, unfortunately, just hasn't been invented for that sort of same model to apply. And I think there are some people who have applied, you know, there's a whole series of different models in terms of trying to value it. But if you just take the number of wallets that are out there and the number of transactions that happen and you sort of just scale it forward into the future, you know, I think the prices are going to be, I think we're going to go past $250,000 of Bitcoin. We could even go up to 500, even $1 million a coin. I can see that happening. It's just a time thing, and there's nothing that can stop that. Nothing. It's not going to slow down anymore. It's too big now. Like the internet, you can't stop the internet rolling out, but you can't stop like Facebook and people using Google. It's too far gone now. It's too far gone. It's too much access, too many people you're in. And so you're betting on that. You're betting on humans continuing to execute the same behavior that they've done in the past, and a huge mass of them as well, and more people coming into it. And that's a trade. That's what the trade is. That's what the investment is. That's a very hard thing to value. Like, I don't think there's a standard model yet. But they'll come. There'll be a mathematical formula around it. There's a stock to flow ratio graph that I really love of this, how much is available, the supply of Bitcoin versus how much is in demand. And I think that's really my sort of go-to graph. And you can Google this, the stock to flow ratio of Bitcoin. And I think that is instructive and it's informative and gives you a way to value these things. Again, it's not the same model of how companies are valued. And so, you know, I think one of the biggest barriers of what's stopping people adopting Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is it challenges the system that everyone's used to, particularly for people who have done well, people who are like really smart, have done really well in the system that they know. They don't want to change that system. And so when there's a new system, they're like, oh, this is a whole new system. How are we going to deal with that? Well, I'm just going to ignore it and downplay it and just assume my system will be here. And that system will carry on. But I think there's you know, this is a new system now that's it's too big. I think once you sort of suspend your disbelief that there could be another system, another financial way of doing things, that rabbit hole starts to open up and you start to realize this is a movement of humanity that is not slowing down. It's speeding up. And I think the adoption of the internet will look slow versus cryptocurrency. Crypto is going to take over everything.
Any final words, places you would like to plug or send the listeners?
You know, if you want to read about my story and that mindset, you can go to fredtrevesta.com and then my book is there and some of my writings. You can follow me on LinkedIn and obviously go to Finder and you can learn all about cryptocurrency. It's a great place to start. Hopefully I can be instructive and insightful and share what I've learned.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed this deep dive with Fred and hope you did too. Be sure to check out all the amazing personal finance and alternative finance content at finder.com. And don't miss Fred's book, Go Live. You can search for it on Amazon or find the link in our show notes. That's all for now. I'll talk to you next week. Until then, here's to living a richer life. Money Girl is a quick and dirty tips podcast. It's audio engineered by Steve Rickyberg with editing by Adam Cecil. Our operations and editorial manager is Michelle Margulis. Our assistant manager is Emily Miller, and our marketing and publicity assistant is Davina Tomlin.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.